This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
This is Alex Smith with Radio EcoShock. Now, the New York Times called her the Queen of Organic Growers. She has a weekly column in the Washington Post and numerous television appearances with husband Elliot Coleman. They run Four Season Farm in Harborside, Maine. Barbara Damrosch, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
I interviewed Elliot a couple of years ago, I think it was, and two things really stuck in my mind about greenhouse gardening, and one was keep it in the ground, not up on these raised planting tables.
We grow in the soil.
Right.
No need to have these benches.
And it works out for a lot of reasons. We could talk about that at length, I'm sure. And the thing that I think is particularly intriguing to me now, talking with you today, is the idea of, all right, you've grown these particular greens that will grow in the climate that we've got. How are you going to really eat them? How are you going to prepare them? How are you going to get them into the kitchen? And that's the topic of your new book, I believe.
Yes, yes. Half of the book is growing and half of it is cooking.
Okay, so what's the title of the book?
The Four Season Farm Gardener's Cookbook. We were sort of emphasizing the cookbook part because it's the first time we've ever done a cookbook. And so people have been asking us for years, when are you going to do a cookbook? Especially me, because I always, when I lecture, I always show pictures of things I've cooked. And so we finally did it.
What do you think are some of the vegetables that we can grow ourselves that present a challenge to make them interesting and table ready?
I think almost anything that you have an awful lot of is a challenge because you're eating it every day. Like, for instance, we're in asparagus season right now back home. And the first time you pick it, it's just like, oh, I haven't tasted asparagus since last year. And it's so wonderful. And then, but you're going to go and pick it for 6 weeks and make the most of that wonderful season. So the more you can do to think of different ways of cooking it, the better. And I think that's true of everything. So like, I will steam it with butter very simply, and I'd be happy to eat it that way every day. But then after a while, I'm making omelets with it or a quiche with it or, you know, maybe creamed on toast or something like that. And a lot of the recipes I have are ones like the ones I just mentioned that I could use with something else that's in season. So maybe 3 months from now, I'd be putting leeks in all those recipes.
You know, I think you can almost overdo it when things do come in. I just went on a rhubarb binge, and then I realized I had a little bit too much rhubarb. It's a very strong vegetable.
It certainly is. In fact, it's not my favorite thing. And we have grown it. I have definitely grown it. I have cooked with it. And there are ways of making it delicious, but it's not for everybody. I think it has to be sweetened a lot. It is very tart.
Definitely. So you're getting some sugar. What happens with your food diet in the kitchen when it's wintertime in Harborside, Maine?
Well, we have so many things that we grow fresh that we don't just rely on storage crops. I mean, we have all of those too. You know, we store potatoes and carrots and beets and turnips and winter squash. But at the same time that we have, for instance, storage carrots, we have fresh dug carrots that we can pull all winter long up until the point where they start to regrow. So about mid-February, they start to send up new foliage and taste less sweet. But spinach will grow all winter long. Baby leaf crops like arugula, mosh, the small lettuces. Anything is more winter hardy if you grow it at a baby leaf size. And the advantage to that as well is that you can keep picking it and it'll keep producing.
I spoke with a professor from Guelph University. They have an agricultural college
there.
Yes,
we've spoken there.
Yes. Well, he operated a greenhouse, and one of the things he told me was that for some of his crops, they weren't really growing very much, and in fact, he didn't water them at all. It was almost like a method of storing fresh food so that you could pick it right there and put it on the table fresh, as opposed to, okay, I'm going to get a big crop out of this.
That's so well said. In fact, one person once described our farm as a giant crisper drawer in the refrigerator. Because basically, the way you time these crops is that you plant them until they're, and they attain harvestable size at just about the point where it becomes very cold and their growth is going to slow down. So they will sit there from maybe, in our case, October into early February in suspended animation. They won't die, but they won't get any bigger either. So basically, we apportion out the bed. So we're allowed to pick, say, this many feet of spinach this week and then another 10 feet or whatever it is the following week, because we're marketing these, of course, not just in our case, where it's not just for home consumption, although it is too.
Well, there are people starting up their home businesses on not very big pieces of land.
Isn't that wonderful? And these are the wonderful crops to do that with. It's a nice little niche crop that, you know, fresh food that most people don't think is available, or maybe is shipped from all the way across the world or something like that.
Yeah, I interviewed one fellow. He had a city lot. Now, this was in California, but he was selling to specialty restaurants and making a reasonable living from it.
Well, we can get $140,000 gross of vegetables off of an acre and a half. So that at least. So that's at least $80,000 an acre. That's very high yields.
You have stunned me. I had no idea that was possible.
You can. And there's a lot of labor involved with it, but we're working on that. Elliot has a lot of tools in the pipeline that mechanize the small farm to just the degree that you don't have to hire as many people.
Well, talking about the labor idea, now, everybody wants to grow their own food, I think, or a lot of our listeners do for sure, but they also have busy lives, you know. Yes. They're raising kids, they're trying to make a living somehow as well. Is it possible to raise a portion of your own food, or is that something we have to leave for our future dreams?
Well, I think it depends on your time and your space. Those are the dual constraints. And this book, we were very, very conscious of trying to help people solve that problem. You know, first of all, we talk about what you can do if you only have a garden the size of your dining table, say. You know, there's quite a bit you can grow if you do cut and come again crops, succession crops, interplanting. It takes a certain amount of strategy. But then we also tell people how to have a big garden if they want to go and really do it. And there's a lot of tricks there, again, for saving space and saving time. So you never let any part of the garden go blank. It's like on radio. You don't want dead air. You don't want dead space in a garden. And we have lots of tricks for just doing everything more quickly. We have a rake with little markers that let you go zip down a bed and then zip the other way and make a planting grid for transplants that would take you so much longer if you were stretching out strings and measuring tapes. This is just almost instant. Same in the kitchen. I have all kinds of recipes that are much quicker than the traditional equivalent. So, for instance, I make a quiche. I don't make a pastry crust, and that's a nuisance. I mean, it's fun, but it takes time. You don't always have time to do that. So it's just I smear the pan with butter, and I shake buckwheat groats, and that lines it. And then you just put your filling in, and the moisture in the filling cooks the wonderful sort of nutty crust. And so it's just so easy and so fast.
I want to try that.
Well, there you go. There you go. I have a cake where instead of having to make a frosting, you just use flavored whipped cream and whatever fruit's in season and flavor the cream according to what the fruit is. And you know, create your own moment for that recipe based on what you have, even if it's just some marmalade you've put up or something like that.
Please consider supporting Radio EcoShock. Find out more at our website, ecoshock.org. You can write me at any time. The address is radio@ecoshock.org. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. My guest is Barbara Damrosch, and I want to make a shout out to any young mothers out there and young fathers. For heaven's sakes, teach your boys how to cook. We've got a whole generation being raised up on... They're ending up on fast food, and it's bad for everybody's health. What's your feeling about this? How are we going to get men cooking?
Well, that's a good question. And it's funny because my son grew up loving to cook. I mean, he was a macho kid. He was good at a lot of sports. He was a big guy, you know, all of that. So he wasn't threatened by the fact that he was interested in cooking. And so he signed up for his high school home ec class. He enjoyed it a lot. And I mean, he taught them how to make hollandaise sauce in a blender. You know, it was wonderful. And he still cooks, like cooks up a storm. My husband, Elliot, is not the cook of the family, but there's certain things that he's really good at doing. He's good at making stir fries and scrambled eggs, and he makes wonderful little pizzas out of tortillas or chapatis. I don't know how you do it. You just hopefully get them hooked, maybe through the taste. I don't know.
I think it's partly a generational thing, too, though. I think if we can get the kids cooking when they're young,
they're
going to do a lot better.
Sure. Take the time instead of saying, get out of the kitchen, I'm busy, you know, just show them a few things.
Yeah, get them up on the counter measuring out the flour, whatever you got to do.
Right, right.
Yeah. So what are you going to tell people at the Mother Earth News Fair when you do your presentation?
Well, I'm just going to show them a few time-saving tricks, but I'm also going to just show what a pleasure it is to eat with the seasons. You know, as Americans, we think we're entitled to walk into a supermarket and have anything we want on any day of the year. Bring in a recipe, you can find every single ingredient right there. Whereas we want the garden to inspire the recipe, because the real luxury for us, the real entitlement, is to get that vegetable or fruit, whatever it is, at the moment where it's perfect. So instead of, you know, being satisfied with melons that were ripened a long time ago in artificial conditions, like the melons I had this morning in a hotel, you know, breakfast, it was pretty awful. I'm waiting for the real melons that we get ourselves at the end of the season in Maine. And it's an ecstatic experience to have that flavor that you've waited for.
Right. You know, tomatoes are such a disappointment
right.
to me. Wherever you find them, they don't taste like tomatoes anymore. I've read that they've been bred for shipping.
Yeah, they've been bred for shipping. Yeah, forgotten to breed flavor into them. They're uniform. They're tough-skinned. They're not very interesting. Often produce is ripened by ethylene gas as opposed to natural ripening. I don't think that gives you particularly good flavor.
Yeah, or they ship it totally green, and eventually it ripens, but you might get it a month
but
later.
Sun-ripened is the way to go.
It is, and there's nothing like a peach when that's in season.
That's right. We have a two-week peach season. We can only grow one variety in Maine. It's hardy, called Reliance. It's not a particularly great peach, but it's our peach. And we enjoy it when it happens.
I didn't know you could grow peaches in Maine. But things are also changing. The plant hardiness map has been changed because of climate change.
Right.
Things are warming up, and there's more stress for some people as far as drought goes for their plants. It's a challenging time to be a gardener.
Yes, it's unpredictable. The trouble with what we're experiencing with climate is that it's a lot of crazy extremes.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, we're having a very cold spring. We did last year, too.
Yeah, and then you got the tremendous floods with, was it Irene, Hurricane Irene? So much rain came.
Yeah, it's all or nothing.
They had 10 inches in San Antonio a few weeks ago. That's a lot of rain for San Antonio,
what do you
Texas.
Do with it all? My goodness.
It just floods everything out, including your garden. And I think people have to be a little more aware when they set up their gardens about how they're going to deal with either a lot of rainfall or none.
That's a good point.
You know, and your water management. It's really
mm-hmm.
important.
That may be collected into a pond or something.
Yeah, or the rain barrels.
Rain barrels are perfect. Go right off your roof. Yeah. Although in Colorado, you're not allowed to do that.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, because it's part of the conservation that they want the earth to absorb the water.
Well, I heard a different story. I heard that in some states, at least, somebody's bought the water rights, say, to the river or whatever, and the rain is what's supposed to feed it.
That could be part of it, too.
To tell somebody you can't collect the rain that falls on your own property.
Isn't it?
Have you got a new book that you're working on or a new project in the works?
No, I'm taking a little rest. I'm going to be doing some writing and photography for Mother Earth News Magazine. One reason I was delighted to come to their fair today. And I have a great respect for that magazine. They seem to go more into depth about everything and just take it a little further. I get a lot of information from it. So anyway, I'm going to be writing for them and just really working on the farm, giving it all I've got.
Right. And do you have a blog with Mother Earth News or your own blog? Or?
No, I'm going to be starting a series, but it won't start until next summer, about cooking and growing. Similar to the material in the book. But I'm writing an article right now that'll come out, I think it's early fall, about the best varieties and types of plants to grow in cold weather.
Great. And how about giving us the website as we finish up?
It's fourseasonfarm.com. And that's fourseasonfarm.com. So no S at the end of season, no S at the end of farm.
Okay, I think we can remember that. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. It's been a pleasure to have Barbara Damrosch on the show.
Thank you so much, Alex. A great pleasure of mine.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.